Today is July 27th, 1988, and I'm here with Peggy Hollowell at her home in Orange Park, Florida. And we're going to be talking about her quilting. Okay, first of all, I'll need your full name.
Peggy Ann Hollowell.
Okay, and the spelling for Hollowell?
H-O-L-L-O-W-E-L-L.
Okay, and the spelling for Ann also?
A-N-N.
Okay, you're not an A-N-N-E.
No.
All right, and what was your maiden name?
Kimmel, German, K-I-M-M-E-L.
Okay. All right, and we need the address here.
2643 Admiral's Walk East.
Okay. And it's
Orange Park.
Okay. And the zip code of Orange Park?
32073.
Okay. And we need your date of birth and your birthplace.
Oh, I was born March 20th, 1947 in Leavenworth, Kansas.
Okay.
But I lived most of my life in Indiana.
Okay. All right. And we need other places that you've lived too, besides Kansas and Indiana.
Like I said, most of my life in Indiana, but I lived in Illinois for a couple of years, and I've now been in Florida for almost three.
Okay, all right. Okay, and your occupation?
A homemaker currently. In the past, I was a floral designer, owned my own floral business. So art and design work have always been interesting to me.
Okay. Okay, I'm wondering how you got started quilting, where the initial interest came from.
Well, needlework in general came from watching my mother and my grandmother as a child, both quilting and so on, crocheting, sewing, embroidery. Mm-hmm. But I didn't start quilting myself until the mid-70s, when I was put in bed with a pregnancy and was bored.
Mm-hmm.
So I took up some needlework and met a neighbor who was quilting at the time, and she started me in with simple pieces, and it grew from that. I was hooked.
Mm-hmm. Had you quilted with your mother at all, or grandmother?
I had watched her. I used to play with scraps of fabrics, mm-hmm. and I can also remember a quilt that I wish was still in the family, but I'm sure by now has been pitched from mm-hmm. use. Mm-hmm. But I can remember laying on a bed in her house ill one day, and she would put this quilt on ill grandchildren because we could feel all the different pieces, and there were velvet pieces and satin pieces, and that would kind of make the time go faster when we were sick. So that was the sick quilt. But didn't quilt as a child.
Yeah.
But appreciated it.
Quilting's been in your family for quite some time, you were telling me.
Long time. Probably from the beginning of time. Knowing the family background, the family came from Germany. My great-grandparents came from Germany, although my grandfather was born here. Some of his brothers and sisters were born in Germany. And my grandmother's side also came from Germany, also, although my grandmother was born in Indiana. But they were frugal people. They were humble. They did not waste at all. So what they had was used, and quilts were made for warmth. And not probably until the 30s or 40s was a quilt actually made as a thing of beauty. By then, people had more money. Could go out and buy fabric to make something, and a pretty quilt would be made and put on a guest bed.
Mm.
But prior to that, quilts were made because in Pennsylvania and Indiana, they had cold winters, and you needed something for warmth. And when clothing was worn out, the patches or the leftover pieces were put together to make a quilt.
Mm-hmm.
So it was utilitarian.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was just a part of the life. Everybody quilted, and back then, you learned to quilt when you were 10, 11 years old.
Mm.
Now we don't have to quilt. We can go out and buy it.
Yeah.
So there's the difference now.
Yeah. It was something that was a lot more of a necessary skill, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Along with other needlework, not just quilting, but...
You mentioned your family comes from the Dunkard sector.
Right. Well, my grandmother was Mennonite. My grandfather was German evangelical, but when they married, they converted to Church of the Brethren, which had a slang name of Dunkard, because we were baptized by immersion in the river, so we were dunked, or called Dunkards, and I was raised a Dunkard, which is a very conservative, religious upbringing, but I would say the main characteristics would be that of being very humble, just like the Amish and the Mennonites. Very, very conservative, very private, very believing in the religion, making what you wear, growing what you eat, that sort of thing. So yes, I was raised that way, and I really think a lot of my values today, not just in quilting, but in the way we live here in this home, stem from that lifestyle.
Yeah, that's some upbringing there.
And I'm glad, yeah.
And quilting was a big part of that community, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Not only were the quilts made because they needed them, but it was also a very strong social. The women would get together weekly and quilt together to make quilts, to help each other finish their quilts, or to make quilts for someone who was going to be married, or to make a quilt for someone who might be going off to war, although the Dunkards were conscientious objectors, but other families were not, so they would, if somebody was going off to war or married or whatever, they would make a quilt and off it would go with them.
Mm-hmm. So, do you remember going to any of the quilting parties or get-togethers?
Yes, and they were usually held either in someone's home or in the church, although as a child, we would go off and play with little dolls that had been made out of leftover pieces, or we would stack pieces. We'd get to count and stack pieces. But the women would be quilting on a frame, and you'd have a row of women on each side, and it would be an all-day thing. And the men would be off doing something else, especially harvest time. Late summer, early fall, the men would be harvesting the wheat or the corn or whatever, and the women would be quilting or canning, but usually quilting. And then a lot of the quilts were also made and sent, they called them relief quilts, quilts for needy people, whether it was here in the States or back in Germany.
Mm-hmm. How many quilts would they typically produce at one of those gatherings like that?
When you get probably 10 women, 5 on each side on a quilt, It goes a lot faster than it takes me about a year to make a quilt, but then I have children to raise too. It's not like the old times. These women would sit at a quilt frame all day long and love every minute of it, and would quilt 20 stitches to the inch, and I'm lucky if I can get 8, and would talk about goings on, never anything cruel, but how long, your original question, how long would it take them to make it? I don't really remember. Pretty fast. With that many women working on a quilt, by the time they actually cut the pieces and pieced them together and then did the quilting, a month or less. Mm-hmm. Hmm. And that was working on it several days a week. And in the wintertime, when harvest was done and other duties were done, some of these women would sit at a quilt frame every day. Hmm. And the Amish and the Mennonites still do this. Not because, I mean, it's just a part of their life. Now they can also capitalize on it because quilting has become a hot thing and they can sell them.
Yeah, you get to Lancaster and you see all the quilt shops that are open now?
All the Midwest states. And I guess there are Amish communities also in Florida.
Oh, I didn't know that at all.
Central Florida. Now, I don't know. I've not gone down to see, but Amish are in 30-some states, I believe, although the most are in the Midwest from, say, Kansas through Michigan over to Ohio, Pennsylvania, and then into the Carolinas as well, mm-hmm. that whole Midwest mm-hmm. thing. And there are still a lot of people in the Carolinas and Kentucky that live back in the hills that still make quilts as if they lived 50, 100 years ago, the kind of frame that you pull a rope and it goes up to the ceiling to get it out of the way for dinner time or company's coming or whatever. But quilting is still very much alive.
Yeah. That's real popular right now.
Real popular now. I think the period of time that it tended to vanish a bit was maybe in the 50s and the 60s, because people had more money. They didn't have to make it for warmth anymore. They could go out and buy a blanket that was more exciting than, I mean, they'd quilted all their life. That's one reason my mother did not quilt as much. She said, oh, that old thing? Oh, we had to have those when we were kids. I'd rather go to Sears and Roebuck and buy a new blanket. That was, to her, that was more exciting. But to me, I look back and I like old things, so a quilt to me is more exciting than a new blanket from a department store.
Yeah. That's interesting how a lot of times, you know, people would just make their quilts and not really think that much about them, or even sometimes, you know, the old quilts would go to the pets. You know, they have no idea about trying to preserve them or restore them, or it just wasn't important or something.
Exactly. So you'd be surprised where you find quilts today. Uh-huh. Over furniture that's being transported from one state to another. Off the back of an Allied moving van, yeah. A neighbor found one and called me on the phone and said, you've got to come see this. And I walked down the street and we asked the guy if we could buy it. And he said, that old thing? That, we just put that on furniture to protect it. And so we got it from him.
Yeah, they'd never dreamed that it would become valuable like that.
It was one from the 40s and it was fairly well worn, but still somebody sat there and put all those little pieces together. And another thing that amazes me, that even though these quilts way back when in the 1800s, even into the 20s and 30s, these women were putting scraps of fabric together to make something of warmth, yet when it was finished, it was a piece of artwork as well. Now, I don't know, because I wasn't there, if they were trying to make it pretty or if that, these two quilts are so different. But yet, if you look at them, there is a pattern. There was a planning of some sense to put it together, and when it came out, it's very graphic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's incredible.
Yet they're leftovers, they're scraps that were just stuffed in a bag to be used.
The sense how to put colors together really amazes me in quilts, because you can really see that a lot of people have a real good eye for it.
And some don't, and that's,
yeah, that's true.
That way today, too.
Yeah.
But another thing, back to my family background, the Dunkards all wore very dark clothing, grays and dark browns and very no bright colors. The same with the Amish and the Mennonite now, for the old order anyway. Wear very subdued colors or black. And the only place that they are allowed to use very bright colors are in their flower gardens and their quilts. So you see reds popping out and yellows and bright greens and turquoise and purple, yet they don't wear those colors.
Mm-hmm.
That's too worldly, and that's the way it was until, with my grandmother anyway, until about the 30s or 40s when pastels became okay to use. And then I saw my grandmother's dress change. She still wore the dresses that had the little cape and the little prayer covering on her head, but she could now wear little pastel prints. They weren't blacks and grays and browns and dark greens.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the quilts reflected that. So,
yeah. A real kind of outlet for their artistic expression there.
And it was fun for them, I'm sure, to do something different and have it be accepted.
Yeah, yeah. I hadn't realized it at all, that they were allowed to really express themselves with bright colors through the quilts, whereas otherwise it'd be subdued there.
Now back to the Amish with that, it depends on the congregation that they belong to. Some, I may have this reversed. In Pennsylvania, they're not allowed to use red. Now it might be Indiana. One of them is not allowed to use a certain color for what reason, I'm not sure. And yet another congregation might not be allowed to use another color.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm talking the old order Amish. There are congregations that are a little more liberal.
Mm-hmm.
And the same with the Mennonites. Some are only Amish, for instance, and some Mennonites can only quilt with plain colors. Other Mennonites and Dunkards can use prints. So it just depends on what congregation they come from.
Yeah. What kind of patterns were real common?
For the Amish, bars, squares, 9-patch, 4-patch, the Amish had simple designs, but then lots of quilting on it. And that's in those little 20 stitches to the inch, and it would be covered. You get into the Mennonite, and you'll see grandmother's fan, which is like the one hanging on the wall, and Dresden plate was a familiar one. Drunkard's path. My clock. At grandma's house.
Oh, the clock got some beast to the interview here.
Off the top of my head, I'm going blank. Log cabin. And log cabin came in a lot of variations. A lot of these patterns came in a lot of variations, and that was left up to the quilter.
Mm-hmm.
States had their own patterns. Indiana has several patterns. Kansas has a lot of one that's called Kansas Dugout. Now, where that came from, I don't know. Each pattern has its history, and a lot of them were just made up by the quilter. But certain periods of time had certain patterns that were popular for that time, and they're still made today.
I like the way the names change in the different regions, even though the pattern's the same.
The same, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then applique, too, which is different than piece, became real popular in the mid-1800s when, or 1875, Victorian period, because once again, people were a little more affluent, and the women were wearing velvets, brocade, not my family, but I mean women in general, and so they would take the scraps of velvet and the scraps of satin and brocade, and they would make these fancy, elaborate, crazy quilts and lots of fancy, gorgeous embroidery on it. And a lot of those are still around today.
In your family, were they doing mainly applique or the piecework?
Mostly piecework. No applique that I know of. Some embroidery, like the one quilt I have that my grandmother made in the late 30s, had some embroidery on it, but almost all of them were pieced, and pieced out of leftover fabric, not purchased fabric. That quilt would be an exception, the one with the embroidery, that because everything matches. That tells me that it was purchased specifically to make that quilt.
Mm-hmm. Were they ever selling the quilts as you were growing up, or was it just made strictly for friends and family?
Occasionally the church would perhaps raffle, although that was not the term used, donation tickets, perhaps, to make money. But the money then usually went to some, the heifer project in Germany, where they sent baby cows over. Well, I mean, it usually was a church-related thing. But primarily the quilts were made and then given for specific, either a needy family or sent overseas.
I see. Uh-huh. Okay. Would they ever be working alone very much, or I guess it was mainly a group activity, wasn't it?
The women, well, both. Yeah. Because it was just a common way of life, the women almost always, I don't remember any women, my grandmother's age and older always had something going at home, as well as whatever project they were working on at church, or these little quilting bees. My mother's generation was a bit different because they didn't have to do that anymore. Now, they'd still go to church and quilt, but they didn't do it at home so much because it was more fun to go buy a bedspread already made up. They didn't have to, so there it was not a necessity.
Okay. And I'm wondering if some of the fabrics that they were using back as you were growing up, you mentioned it was mainly just, yeah, there's a train going past here. It might draw me out. I'll wait till it goes past.
Okay. I forgot about the train.
I think we're past the engine at least, so it won't be quite as loud. Oh, well, that's all right. I'm wondering, you mentioned that they're using mainly scrap fabrics and stuff like that. What specific material was it made of? I guess primarily cotton?
Cottons and wools, and occasionally you'd come across linen. Now, if you did have linen, it was probably homespun. And, well, the cotton and wool, natural fibers. And that's real typical with the Amish, the Mennonite, and the Dunkards. because they are natural fabrics. Okay. And today, women, a purist quilter would use only 100% cotton or wool.
I see. Uh-huh.
Most of us.
And also at the time, I would suppose that they had pretty traditional roles for women and real traditional roles for men, where they wouldn't entertain a change.
Women took care of the home, the gardens, not the fields, the gardens, the canning, the cooking, the raising of children. Activities were either church-based or home-based. Very tightly knit families. Friendships that last forever, which I miss. This is a real transient society now, and I miss having a friend that you meet when you're a child, and she's still your friend when you're 80 years old. You don't see that as much anymore, and I think that's real sad.
Yeah, we do so much moving around that just changes real fast.
Yes, yeah. But the women's roles were very traditional roles. Uh-huh. They worked at home, not out of the home.
How about for the men? What were
their... Well, the men in the German Baptist or Dunkard Church of the Brethren, Mennonite, so forth, they were either carpenters or farmers. Those two primarily, craftsmen of one sort or another, and very self-sufficient. If someone lost a barn or a house due to fire or lightning or in Indiana tornadoes, then, and I remember those as a kid, tornadoes. If somebody lost a barn, then everybody got together and you went in and you'd have a barn raising or a house raising, whatever, and you would busy yourself. The women would busy themselves. They'd make the curtains if curtains were allowed. In our particular congregation, you could have curtains, some you couldn't. The men would do the building and the women would do the cooking to serve the men while they were building or whatever.
So you'd still have that community spirit among the men?
Always. Yes, off on their own. And then in the evening, I guess there was probably more socializing going on in the summer because in the evening when the work was done, you'd sit on the front porch with the old paper fan that said so-and-so's funeral home on it and sit there and just chat about the day and catch up on family.
Yeah. So almost all the quilting then would be done by the women?
I don't remember any men doing the quilting. If they did, they probably wouldn't admit to it. Uh-huh. No, the men were doing men things, building and harvesting and planting the fields and that sort of thing.
Yeah. You can see, of course, that like the quilting would be just a natural part of the duties of a lot of the women there.
It was not thought of as an art, although a lot of planning had to be done. There's a lot of math involved in quilting to get everything to fit right. So these were not dumb little housewives that were sitting at home with a needle and a thread. These were women that were intelligent. They may not have had college educations, although some did, but they could certainly count and measure and figure how much of what was needed to put it together. And beautiful, beautiful finished quilts, one right after another.
Okay. I'm also interested in looking at quilting in the present, too. And I'm interested in kind of about your own quilting some. I'm wondering about how many quilts that you've made in your lifetime so far.
Oh, well, like I said, I'm slow.
Yeah. It's kind of a ballpark figure.
Well, I've made a baby quilt for every niece or nephew that's been born so far, and that's four. And I've made one large. I've helped make a lot of quilts. Group quilts, and so I don't know how to count that because I've been in on a lot of group quilts, but those that I started and finished myself, probably about six.
Who do you quilt with?
Here I quilt with a group called Friendship Quilters. It's a quilt guild, and we get together once a month, and we have made a quilt every year, And this year we've made the best, of course, a quilt called Arrowroot, and it will be at the Prime Osborne in September, so you can see it. We're selling donation tickets, and someone at the quilt show will win it. We'll draw a name there. But a group that my favorite little group, the group that I will always remember, is my friends back in Indiana. There were six of us, and we rotated homes every Friday. We got together because we put our children in a little Mother's Day Out program. This was Mom's Day Out, and we'd go to someone's home and sit there and drink coffee or tea and stitch and share ideas. And if you went with a problem, oh, what am I going to do with this? Somebody always had an answer. Mm-hmm. And we'd sit there, and I did that for six years until I moved here.
The group that you're working with here, are most of them in Orange Park, or are they kind of throughout Jacksonville?
They're all over. It's based here in Orange Park simply because we meet at the library. That's the only reason. But anyone is welcome to come. We meet once a month, like I say, said. And we teach those. We have every level. We have beginners to advanced. We have award winners. We have those that are closet quilters. We sit around and joke about going out to buy fabric, and you buy two pieces of the same thing so you can have one to cut and one to look at. And I'm one of those. I know that's silly, but you see a pretty print, and that's what you do.
Yeah. It interests me how there's quite a few quilt groups here in Jacksonville.
Several.
Yeah.
This is just one of about five guilds. When I moved here 3 years ago, this was the only guild. So the interest has really grown, and people are coming out of the closet, so to speak, and joining a guild so that they can learn and share ideas.
Yeah. The thing that really interests me about this, I was talking to some of the older quilters in the area, and they said that in the past in Florida, it was very rare to get together and work with your quilts with other people. They'd almost all do it on their own.
Right.
And
go ahead.
Oh, they also said that a lot of it was done just as for hire for other people in the area. They'd make their own quilts, but then they'd also be hired to do the quilting on somebody else's.
You'd have to be brave. There are so many hours involved, and how do you count the time per hour? But quilts are going at between $500-$700 a quilt now. When I put that much time into a quilt, I don't want to let it go to someone that's out of the family. Hopefully, and I think a lot of us feel this way too, when you make a quilt and you give it to someone, hopefully that person cares enough about that quilt that they'll at least take care of it. And hopefully it'll be around for a few years and maybe even passed on at some point. I have a couple of quilts that were mine when I was a baby. Now, they're practically rags, but I would never throw them away because I remember them and I know who made them.
Yeah. Yeah.
For those two reasons.
People need the memories behind the quilt. It kind of gives you a connection back to the past there. Yeah.
Each of my children had one.
Yeah.
The one my son has is pretty ragged, but it's gone to every nap time with him and on every trip with us and that.
Yeah. There's a lot of memories in the quilts, so. Yeah.
They all tell stories, one way or another.
That's interesting to see, like, you can see heirlooms getting their start, you know, with the quilt that's being made now.
I know some of the first ones I made, I'm sure, will never be heirlooms, but...
Well, in your family, maybe.
If they just mean something to my children, that's... I just want them to appreciate the fact that a lot of love and a lot of time, not money... Fabric does cost more today, but mostly it's time and love goes into it, and it's made with that particular child or friend or whatever in mind. I have one in the planning stages now for a 90-year-old grandfather. Hopefully I'll finish it while he's still alive, just something he can throw in his lap when he's watching television, and he would appreciate it because he is from that time. So there's a million more ideas than a quilter can pump out because they take longer than what the thought.
Yeah.
Is. Well,
quilts are real security blankets, you know.
For any age.
Yeah. Let me check my tape. I need to flip it over here. side too. And we're talking a little bit about some of your own quilting here too. I'm wondering what types of patterns you like to do. What are some of your favorite ones you've worked
with? I love the old traditional patterns. I know that there's a big trend these days, especially from the East Coast and the West Coast, to do very modern, contemporary pieces. And that's fine, but that's not what turns me on. What I like are quilts that are... I try to make quilts that look old. I look for fabrics that are prints that look old. And I love just about every old pattern. I love Irish chain, which has been around for who knows how long. And I love log cabin and grandmother's fan and Dresden plate. And I love the old... Why, I don't know. I guess it's because I love old things. I love antiques, and they look better with antiques. I don't know. I just like the old patterns, and I like the stories behind them.
Yeah. Have you tried contemporary ones at all, or just no interest?
Well, actually, if you look at the little wall hanging there, that's an Amish piece. That was one I did a long time ago. But it really, in a sense, is very contemporary, except maybe for the colors, which are Amish.
Yeah.
But to have the three little gray pieces, which stand out from the green and the red and the black, the gray is called the sparkle.
Oh, I see.
And you see that same idea with a lot of contemporary pieces, but I still go for the old traditional.
Yeah. The more traditional pieces. Ones always have very symmetrical styles and
there
balance.
Right. And everything's orderly.
Yeah.
I don't know, it just seems neat and tidy and orderly, I guess, although every little piece could be a different piece of fabric. Trip Around the World is one. A charm quilt, which back in the 1800s was a real popular one, can be made today. But the rule with a charm quilt is that every single piece, every single square or triangle or whatever, must be a different piece of fabric. No two can be alike. And that's the charm of it, I guess. But I like those, even though it's new fabric and...
Yeah. I like with the contemporary quilts where they play with the idea of balance and symmetry, but they'll throw in just a few things to throw it off a little bit.
And yet, that's what the Amish did, and
oh,
still
really?
Do.
Uh-huh.
Because for Amish and Mennonite and Dunkards, if it's perfect, it's too worldly. So therefore, in every Amish quilt, there will be a mistake on purpose, so that it won't be worldly. Such as, if you'll notice the way the greens and reds are set, some of them are not set the same way. Those were mistakes that I made on purpose to follow the traditional Amish method.
I see.
So that it's some are top to bottom instead of side to side.
Yeah.
And that was done on purpose.
Huh.
So that it would not be worldly.
Is that done to prevent from being like blasphemy and pretending that you're perfect? Or
well,
or
only because the Amish...
A break from style?
No. The only thing that's perfect is God. God is perfection. And that's the whole thing behind these religions. So you can't... No, like I said, no one is perfect but God. Therefore, even though they had masterfully put that quilt together and it was perfect, they made sure it wasn't by making sure that a stitch was missed or that a color was turned or something.
Huh. That's interesting. I'm interested also in other beliefs behind the quilting. Were there other ones besides that?
Besides the religion thing?
Yeah. Like sometimes you run into what would be called the superstitions about quilts. You know, like it's bad luck to break a needle, or it's bad luck to make a lone star quilt by yourself. Were those passed around?
I've heard them.
Yeah.
I don't remember as a child any of those.
Yeah.
They were probably there, and I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That I don't know, but this might be of interest to you. Back when everything was scarce, to make a quilt warmer, if they could not come across with the filling to put in it, they put newspaper.
Oh, really?
Or old letters. Any kind of paper, because paper's a good insulator. So a lot of the old quilts that you find... The kind of crinkle, that's because there's paper on the inside that was used to build it up and make it warm.
Hmm.
And that's not a superstition. That didn't make that off the track.
It's just kind of a little trick of the trade to the theory.
Think of that. But there was an old saying, and I've been trying to remember this all day long, and I can't. All I can remember is the last line, and that was, "Use it up or do without." And that was the thinking. Waste not. You don't waste anything. That's worldly as well.
So, the real sense of economy and even ecology.
Very much so. And quilters are that way today. It's funny. We'll go out now and spend $6 a yard for fabric when back then it was 22 cents a yard. And if we have one little itty-bitty square, oh, we might use that in something else. So we have our little stash bags, too.
Mm-hmm. That's fun to see that carried over from that old time. It's the same thing.
We get real stingy. I mean, if somebody runs out of a piece of fabric that they bought and they can't find it anymore, they'll bring it to Guild Me and say, "Does anybody have any of this?" And somebody might, but they might not put their hand up either because that's at home in their own stash. Someone said, "Well, I can probably give you enough to finish what you're working on." So, we quilters are funny.
What goes on at those meetings? I'm wondering what that would be like to...
Oh, you have to go through, at most meetings you have to go through reading of the minutes and all that kind of jazz. But once that's over with, we always have a program, and the program is teaching something. You might have a quilter bring in what she's done and just explain her life and pretty much what I'm doing today, her background and her life and how quilting has been with her through the years, or someone who has some special technique, such as applique or cathedral window, which is a technique, will come in and demonstrate. I, for instance, this past April went to Paducah, Kentucky to attend a quilt show and seminar and took some classes, and so I took photograph slides, and next month I'm going to show those slides. Just to let them know what's going on in other parts of the country.
That's great.
And then we also have hands-on each week because we're always getting somebody in that doesn't know anything but wants to learn. So we have a continuing series going for beginners, starting with threading a needle and making a template to a finished product. So we try to teach. That's the main thing. And we also want to learn. So. Yeah.
Plus, then you get together and work on that.
Oh, and then we sit there and drink coffee and eat goodies and...
All right.
Yeah. So it's a social thing as well.
Yeah. And then it interests me how both... You get the whole social function behind quilting as well as the real artistic part, too. The two go hand in hand, I think.
And this guild, along with the other area guilds, put together a quilt show last year. And this time, or last year was the first time they requested a admission fee. And all that money went to the Ronald McDonald House that's being built here in Jacksonville. This year, the money that we will, admission money, will go to Hubbard House, which is a house for battered women. Next year, it will be something else.
Okay.
So that's something new that we've started in. The library program, teaching children how to quilt, is something that we started this summer. And we had a few come in. Hopefully, next year, we'll have more. We would love to see... students, teachers, home economics, art, whatever, grade, any grade school, your class, seriously, come through the quilt show, and we'll even provide a guide.
Sure. Oh, great.
And they can touch and feel and see what's going on today.
I get the word out to my teachers. I won't actually be in the schools toward like the end of September, but I can get word out to them that, you know, it'll be coming up. That just fits in real hand in glove with what I do with my program.
We'd love it. And if we know in advance, we'll have someone here to meet you at the door. We had one group go through last year, and we gave each child a little glove to wear so that they could touch but yet not get perspiration or oils or whatever on the quilt, and then showed them how a quilt is put together and took them on a tour, and they brought their lunch, and they had a site outside the Primore Osborne Convention Center where they could eat their lunch, and it worked out very well.
Oh, great. Okay. Let's see. I'm also interested in some of the ideas of special occasions that quotes that you've made quotes for. You've mentioned you've made them
babies.
For all your...
Babies, yes. Babies, my own children, weddings, high school graduations. Now, these are not necessarily mine, but other quilters I quilt with. Any kind of special occasion to get a gift. I have an anniversary quilt for my parent-in-laws that I have in the design process right now, and they also are fairly religious. So each of these blocks in the quilt, one is called Jacob's Ladder, one is, you know, Crown of Thorns. Each of these are old traditional patterns, but they all stem from the Bible, and they will think that's neat. But any occasion, weddings, births, whatever.
You have the friendship quilt.
The friendship quilt. And that really is not a new idea. There were, they called them autograph quilts or friendship quilts way, this goes way back in the 1800s, when someone would be leaving to go away or getting ready to get married or whatever. In this case, these blocks in this quilt were made for me by my Indiana quilting friends, and they were given to me at a little surprise luncheon the day before I left to come here. So that's a friendship quilt.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they just gave you the blocks and then you did the quilting?
They gave me the blocks, and one of the other girls made all the little pine trees that go around the border. And they, with stitchery in stitches, signed their name to each block. And then I put it together.
Oh, that's great. Like, is that usually the way that it's done, where they give you the blocks and then you do the quilt?
Either blocks or finished. What we had started was, in this little group, that each time a girl had a birthday, we would present them with a block of their choice. And in this case, I love houses, the old schoolhouse design. And there are lots of different schoolhouse designs. And so I had said, I want little 6-inch schoolhouse designs when my birthday comes around. Well, my birthday's in March, but we moved in February. So they planned all this behind my back, and before we moved in February, presented me with all these little houses.
That's great.
So that's where that came from.
Yeah. I'm interested in having you tell me about this quilt up here.
The quilt, the fan. Well, the pattern is called Fan or Grandmother's Fan. There are a lot of different names for it, but I'll call it Grandmother's Fan. It was made by my great-grandmother and my great-great-grandmother. It was made, or finished, I should say, I don't know when they started. It was finished in 1914 in Valley View, Pennsylvania, and was brought to Indiana for the wedding of my grandfather and his bride. So it was a wedding gift, and that is all documented by family history. My mother knew my grandmother. I can remember them talking about it. It's made... it's almost all wool. There are a few cotton pieces in it, but it's primarily wool. I would guess old suiting, old skirts, lots of different colors, strange colors if you look at it separately, red, gray, pink, blues, greens, peach, and it's very graphic. If it was photographed and on a postcard, it would look like something that was made today. But it was made in 1914, and they were German evangelical, and given to my grandfather when he got married. And there goes the clock.
Oh, well, that's right.
But because it's wool, and probably because it was not used a lot, would be the reason for the condition it's in, because it is in very good condition. It measures 72 inches square, but you'll notice that those triangles don't end perfectly at the corners. They just kept going until part of one ends on one corner. But who cares? And it's probably my favorite because I know for sure when it was made and who it was made by and what it was made for, the history. And I love the colors. It's bright, which is so out of character for the Dunkard women, except for that's where they could show their color. They couldn't wear it, but they could put it. So who knows where the red came from? It was certainly nothing that they wore. It was not drapery fabric or upholstery fabric from the home. Someone probably gave it to them as scraps, and it entered the quilt.
I'm interested in the stitches on there.
That's called feather stitching, and that first came about in the Victorian era when I was telling you about all the fancy stitch work they did. Chicken stitching, feather stitching, there are several different names for it. But that is also very, that's out of character for Amish, Mennonite, and Dunkard quilts. Why it was put on there, I don't know. Somebody was having a good time. And it's in a lot of different colors on there, from yellow to whatever. However, all the quilting that's done on there is either gray or black thread, which is typical of Amish. Amish usually quilt with black, but Mennonite and Dunkards would quilt with gray or black. So part of it's traditional and part of it's not, but the feather stitching was added, which gives it a Victorian feel, but it was made in 1914.
Huh. How do you think your grandfather used that? Was that just for show, or do you think he actually slept under it or anything?
Oh, I'm sure it was slept under. I can remember sleeping under it on occasion when I was little and had completely forgotten about the quilt until my grandmother passed away. And I was the only relative still living in Indiana, so I was the one that had to go through all the stuff when she passed away. And I came across that quilt and a few others, and some others I have packed away that are too fragile to even open. And then I remembered it. And then I asked my mother about it. She said, "Don't you remember that's the one that was a wedding gift from the German grandparents to me?" So then it all came back, and I wanted to do something with it. I felt it needed to be shown, at least in this family. I like to walk in here and see it every day.
Oh, it looks great with that wood background there above your fireplace.
Well, when we bought this house, I walked in here the first time and I said, that's where Grandma's quilt, or I should say Grandpa's quilt. That's where the quilt will go. Mm-hmm. And that was the first thing we put up when we moved in. And there it will stay.
How about some other kind of special quilts in your family?
Well, the ones that I showed you, the green and white one, Grandma made that in the late 30s. My grandfather, although education was not really pressed among the Amish and Mennonite, my grandfather decided that's too bad. I want to learn. And so he went off to college. And this is in the very early 1900s. And not only did he get a degree and teach, he then went on to become dean and president of two different Church of the Brethren Dunkard colleges. And Grandma made the green and white quilt late 30s sometime. And it was always kept on the guest bedroom bed. Because back in those days, as college president, they entertained a lot. And when anyone would come in to perform at the college or speak at the college, they didn't stay at a motel. They stayed at my grandparents' home. And that was the quilt that was on the bed, the guest bed.
Mm-hmm. That green is interesting. What kind of fabric is that?
Well, the quilt is all 100% cotton, but when the 30s came about, the war was over. Prior to that, the people that wove fabric, the mills, were making fabric for war. I mean, they weren't making it for house ladies to make things out of. But once the war was over, pastels became a real big thing, and they had now discovered dyes that held good color. And pastels were the rage. This is pale green. And it went by a lot of different names, but one was institutional green or arsenic green. Pale pinks, pale blues, pale yellows were all very fashionable at the time. And women were now financially able to go out and purchase fabric to make pretty quilts that went on spare beds. and or in the olden days, when I say olden days, 1800s, 1900s, early 1900s, they would put that special quilt on the bed on Sunday because that's the day the preacher would come by to visit. And so they would fuss up the house. And that was a woman's way of, that was her way of showing that she was doing her job. She was making the home pretty. And now pastels were accepted, at least by the Dunkards.
That one's interesting because it's got the embroidery.
The embroidered baskets. My grandmother loved to embroider. She loved to tat. But every basket on there, and every, it's a basket of flowers. Each basket of flowers is different. There are no two alike. And I thought that was pretty ingenious of my grandmother, although I don't know if she thought them up herself or if it was a design book that she had. During the 30s, newspapers like the Indianapolis Star or the Kansas City, whatever, would come out with a pattern of the week or a pattern of the month. And that's how a lot of the new names, a version of an old design but with a new name, would come about. So some of those patterns could have come from a pattern of the week or the month. Who knows?
It would be fun to go back and look at the newspapers at that time period and see if...
We have a quilter in our guild that collects. You go to quilt shows or antique shops and you'll come across these. Not so much down here, but up in the Midwest. You can still go to yard sales and auctions and find old patterns.
That's great. I'm interested also in what you've experienced, what you found with some of the quilting in Florida. What, say, back like 40 and 50 years ago, what kind of quilting was being done here?
Back 40 or 50 years ago, that would have been the 30s, basically the same thing was being done here, but because of the humidity in Florida, quilts have not held up like the ones up north. The humidity, there are two things that absolutely destroy fiber over a period of time. That's humidity and light. And you certainly have both in Florida. So, although when we were doing this quilt documenting for the Museum of History in Tallahassee, we were really searching for Florida-made quilts. And we came across quite a few that were still in reasonable condition. But the factor that had done the most damage to them were mildew, humidity, and light.
What kind of patterns were real common here?
The same patterns, basically, as other places, but there aren't as many around because of the weather conditions, and that's real sad.
Yeah, the colors would just fade out, or they'd rot, or both.
Rot.
You
find them now in old trunks if you come across a find, and they'll be covered with little black spots. And you pick one up and it falls apart in your hands, which is sad.
Yeah.
The Museum of Arts and Sciences here has a nice collection, most of which were just given to them because people down here said, I don't want it anymore. It was my grandmother's, but I don't want to throw it away. Do you want it? And they say, of course, we'll take it. And I've gone down there and helped. We've rolled them all up in acid-free paper to help restore them. Some are too fragile to even show, but they do have a nice collection down there. And at least they're in a safe, dehumidified, acid-free place.
Yeah.
Plus, another acid is a big destroyer of fiber. A lot of these were put away in old pine chests or old oak chests. Well, there's nothing worse than putting fabric up against wood. Wood is filled with acid, and the acid would, or insects.
Yeah.
There's definitely an insect problem in Florida.
Yeah.
So that's a reason there aren't too many around. But the women made the same patterns, used the same fabric.
What's that?
Thinner quilts were made here because you didn't need the thick ones. A lot of the quilts that were made down here did not have any batting in the middle. It would just be a top and a bottom.
Hmm.
That would be a major difference.
I didn't realize that at all.
You get into the Carolinas where they grew their, or Georgia where they grew their own cotton. They would make their own filling out of cotton. And a lot of the, one of the ways you can tell an old quilt from that era is little cotton seeds are still in it. So if you hold it up to the light and you see the bumps and you feel it, and if it's hard, it's more than likely a cotton seed that got did not get combed out.
Yeah. What do you say? You mentioned that you like a little bit very symmetrical and balanced patterns in the quilt. What are some other things that you'd like to see in the different quilts and that you try to put into yours?
Well, sparkle. I mentioned that before. I like very muted. I like it all. I love stars, and stars are an old pattern too, but I love to see very muted, almost washed out blues and washed out reds, washed out any color really, but I love blues and reds, or greens. I love those, and those are very traditional colors. The blues and reds, late 1800s, the grays would be into the early 1900s. I don't like orange. I really don't like the real strong, bright. That's too new for me, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I primarily like the muted tones, and I love black. Every quilt ought to have black in it because it gives it depth, number one. And number two, that's very Amish. That's very Mennonite, the black.
It's amazing how you can get that real three-dimensional effect to a quilt. I mean, both with, well, like that one with the feather stitching really gives it, but other ones I've noticed that all of a sudden when you get into the quilt part, they just really know what they're doing to give that, you know, it's got so much depth to it. With the use of the pattern and
yes.
the techniques that they're putting together, just...
And also, the way you quilt it will bring, either recess the fabric or pop it out. So that you learn with experience. I used to think you just outlined everything. Well, I now know that there are limitless ways of quilting something to give it a three-dimensional... The quilting, to me, is what brings the quilt to life.
Yeah.
First, the color and the pattern and all, but it's the quilting that really makes the finished product.
Yeah. It seems like there's probably just a certain stage along the way where all of a sudden it just pops up and you've got it. You know, I do a little bit of drawing myself, and like I reach a certain point in my drawings where like it might not be going so well, but you keep pushing a little bit,
all
maybe shade a little bit, and all of a sudden there it is.
Uh-huh.
I would suppose the same thing quilting.
And quilters are different too. Some women will sit down and plan everything out on paper before they even begin. I mean, from the color to the design to the quilting. I sort of do it as I go along. I find it more interesting. I'm not a planner anyway. I mean, yes, you have to plan the mathematics of it so that everything fits together. But I don't know how I'm going to quilt it until it's all put together. And even then, I may change it as I go.
Mm-hmm.
I'll start it, and if something isn't working, or like you say, I'll work with it until I go, that's it.
Yeah.
And then I go on from there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. If you push it too far, I mean, you can only take a good thing so far. And
well,
I think
that's being creative.
Yeah, that sounds like a good way to do it. Yeah, yeah. I like that idea of just kind of putting it together with the letting it flow that way rather than necessarily, you know, mapping it all out that way.
Each to his own.
Yeah. And I think I like that freedom of kind of experimenting around a little bit more. I don't think it's a good idea to get stuck, you know, with sticking with the original
right.
plan and going the whole way through. You mentioned that you're teaching your daughter to quilt.
We're trying. My daughter is 12, and she has cross-stitched, which was a good beginning. And we tried quilting about 2 years ago, and she just found working the needle too frustrating. So we put it all away, and this year we got it back out. And she's much more agile with the needle now. You have to work with the needle until you get your own rhythm. And she is now beginning to get a rhythm with piecing, and her stitches are smaller. They're more consistent. They don't, wiggle.
Oh, yeah.
She can follow a straight line now. And although she found parts of the process frustrating, there were some places where I made her rip it out and do it again because it was that bad. And she didn't like that. But she did put it back together, and we got a top piece, or it's a pillow top or a small wall hanging. Don't know yet which.
Mm-hmm.
And it's together, and it's ready to be quilted now. So she will start the quilting this week.
Good. Do you think she'll stick with it?
We'll see. I don't know. I think if she's like me, the quilting part for me is the most relaxing and the most fun because you can just sit there and do it. You don't have to be cutting or ripping or it's not that it's brainless because you do have to pay attention to what you're doing. But that's the relaxing part for me. And hopefully she'll be a little more relaxed when she starts doing the quilting and actually sees it pop out in recess and come alive. And then we'll put the binding on and it'll be all done.